Welcome to the debate. Our brains are, well, truly remarkable, constantly constructing the reality we inhabit. They do this by skillfully weaving together, you know, the sensory information that comes in with these deeply held internal theories and predictions we have. This foundational cognitive process, it shapes everything from how we perceive the world around us to how we understand others and, well, even ourselves. Today, we're diving into a crucial and often debated aspect of this cognitive architecture, the role of cognitive biases. Things like confirmation bias, prejudice, these naturally emerge from these very same predictive models.
The central question we'll explore, inspired by Daniel Yon's insightful book, A Trick of the Mind, is whether the brain's reliance on these prior beliefs and the resulting biases represent an adaptive and essential feature for navigating a complex and uncertain world, or if they're actually an inherent vulnerability that fundamentally distorts our perception and understanding, often leading to, frankly, detrimental consequences. I'll be arguing that these biases are often adaptive, serving as necessary filters for efficient perception and decision making.
And I'll be contending that, while yes, they stem from these fundamental brain processes, these biases frequently lead to really significant misinterpretations, impaired judgment, and even societal harm, making them, I think, a profound vulnerability.
Okay, so to begin, I'd propose that our brain's predictive models, including what some might, you know, label as biases, are truly a foundational feature, not a bug. They are indispensable for making sense of this constant stream of sensory input we get. I mean, without some kind of theoretical framework, raw measurements of reality are simply meaningless noise. If you consider the Bayesian perspective, it suggests that clear thinking involves evaluating incoming evidence against our background knowledge, our prior probabilities of what's likely to be true. It's not only rational, but also incredibly efficient for our inferences to be guided by what's most probable. This filtering, I'd argue, is deeply adaptive. Specifically, something like confirmation bias, it can actually be a valuable mechanism in a noisy, fluctuating world. If we make a confident decision, we naturally operate under the expectation that it's probably correct, right? So buffering this initial choice against constantly fluctuating, noisy evidence prevents us from turning good decisions into bad ones, as Yon puts it. Think of a stock trader, makes a confident buy based on a clear upward trend, resisting the urge to sell at the first downward ripple, which could just be noise, is pretty essential. Furthermore, the brain's constant top-down projections, the ones that actively edit our perceptions to resemble expectations, like seeing that imaginary edge in the Kinesa triangle, you know, that optical illusion where your brain just fills in missing lines to see a shape, or segmenting continuous speech into distinct words. These aren't errors. They're essential for making an ambiguous world intelligible and efficient to navigate, letting us function in real time. Without these so-called biases, perception itself would be, well, practically impossible.
Okay, I come at it from a rather different way. Because while it's certainly true the brain functions by forming hypotheses and making predictions, the critical issue really arises when these prior beliefs dominate experience or when they're simply inappropriate for the situation. That leads to a significant disconnect from actual reality. And this isn't just about efficiency anymore. It's about accuracy and, maybe more importantly, consequence. Let's take the case of Marjorie Kemp, the medieval mystic. Her devout beliefs about heaven and hell were so potent, so strong, that they led her to perceive flame-tongued devils clawing at her bedside and to hear blissful angelic music. Her strong expectations literally flowed into her perceptual systems, generating experiences that were, by modern psychological understanding, hallucinations. She was perceiving what isn't. Now, these are profound distortions, not adaptive perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, the pervasive illusions of control really demonstrate this inherent vulnerability. People frequently feel they can influence events they objectively cannot, like pushing placebo elevator buttons or, you know, throwing dice hard or hoping for a higher number. The brain concocts a false hypothesis of control that seems to perfectly fit the data from its perspective, but it's objectively incorrect. It becomes a distorting rather than clarifying lens. Even in that context of facilitated communication, A discredited practice, I should add, well-meaning facilitators unintentionally penned false allegations. Their strong expectations about the therapy's efficacy led them to feel passive, creating these illusions of passivity where they failed to experience control over actions that were genuinely their own. This really shows how prior beliefs, when they're misapplied or just too dominant, can severely impair judgment and even cause significant harm, fundamentally altering reality to fit the expectation.
Right. While you highlight instances of, yes, profound distortion, like Marjorie Kemp's visions or these illusions of control, I'd argue the brain isn't simply distorting things randomly. It's engaged in a really delicate balancing act, trying to strike a functional equilibrium between the incoming sensory signals and its prior hypotheses. The system works, by and large, precisely because seeing the world through the lens of implicit theories is a key part of what makes perception work. Without these internal models, the brain would just be overwhelmed, struggling to make sense of ambiguous measurements. The problem of perception, as philosophers call it, would be impossible to solve. So this efficiency, even if it sometimes looks imperfect from a purely objective ground truth standpoint, is profoundly adaptive for survival. It enables rapid pattern recognition in the absolute sea of data it swims in, which is crucial for quick decisions and actions in a complex, often dangerous world. So isn't this fundamental efficiency the thing that ensures our survival and function inherently adaptive, even if it occasionally, you know, errs?
That's a compelling way to put it, but I would frame it differently. This efficiency becomes deeply problematic when it systematically produces inaccurate outputs. Outputs that aren't merely subjective quirks, but can be deeply harmful. The motiveless prejudice we're now seeing emerge in artificial intelligence algorithms provides a frankly chilling analogy here. If an AI is trained on biased data, for example, if a computer vision model gets thousands of pictures where most people shown in kitchens are women, it will learn to associate woman with kitchen. Simple pattern matching. Similarly, if large language models read billions of internet pages filled with xenophobic or racist tropes, they can learn to associate, say, Muslim with violent terms like terrorism. These algorithms aren't designed to be bigoted. They just, as Jan says, drink in the patterns the world presents us with.
Mm-hmm.
So if our biological brains similarly drink in the patterns the world presents us with, then living in an unequal and unbalanced world is really all it takes to end up with a biased brain, completely independent of any dark motives. The mechanism itself might be efficient, sure, but its output can become deeply maladaptive and unjust purely because of its input. So while you emphasize the brain's balancing act, isn't this less about balancing and more about a system just replicating, sometimes amplifying harmful societal patterns?
Okay, I see why you'd think that, but let me offer a slightly different perspective. Even biases that seem counterintuitive on the surface can be seen as adaptive within a broader framework. Take what's sometimes called the philosophos. It's a fascinating concept describing how experts in one field often, well, overconfidently believe they're experts in others too.
Now, while it might lead to overconfidence, this often arises from what Jan describes as a perfectly rational cognitive process. It's about integrating past successes and acknowledging the positive manifold, which is just the general observation that cognitive abilities tend to correlate. If you're excellent in one area, your brain makes a reasonable, albeit maybe generalized, prediction that you might be capable in others. This allows for efficient prediction of future potential, encouraging goal pursuit, ambition, things we generally see as positive. And furthermore, the confirmation bias we discussed earlier, that tendency to stick with an initial decision, it can genuinely stop us from turning good decisions into bad ones in situations where evidence fluctuates rapidly. It buffers us against knee-jerk reactions to mere noise, helping us maintain a stable course when our initial assessment was strong.
Aren't these adaptive functions that ultimately serve our goals and our decision-making, even if they sometimes involve a degree of, let's say, over-optimism or overconfidence?
While I understand the appeal of seeing it that way, I see a significant flaw in framing the philosophos, or just general overconfidence, as inherently adaptive. This isn't always about rational integration. I think it's often a profound failure of metacognition, you know, our ability to accurately assess our own knowledge and abilities. It leads doctors, for instance, to make serious diagnostic errors because they neglect follow-up tests, they ignore potential inconsistencies, they're just too sure of their initial hunch. If confidence gets too high, our brains literally tune out evidence that might tell us we were wrong, which leads to decisions getting worse, not better. This metacognitive failure, it's also strikingly linked, research shows, to those holding unusually extreme political views, disrupting their ability to genuinely change their minds when confronted with counter-evidence. And moreover, you have social dynamics, like confidence matching, which can distort individual confidence, especially in competitive settings. If we're around super confident people, we might inflate our own certainty, which can lead to potentially worse joint decisions if the expressed confidence isn't accurately calibrated to actual knowledge. This doesn't feel adaptive. It creates vulnerabilities that are both individually and socially costly. It fundamentally impairs our ability to learn and adapt precisely when we are wrong.
Okay, my colleague raises important points about the real costs of overconfidence. But the brain also exhibits something called meta-learning, which is its remarkable ability to adjust its own learning rate. Basically, how quickly it updates its beliefs based on whether the environment seems stable or volatile. In environments that are fundamentally stable, it is arguably rational to be stubborn. It makes sense to resist updating core beliefs based on just single anomalies. This allows for the formation and, crucially, the maintenance of stable, robust models of the world. For example, think about a simple game of hide-and-seek. A child quickly learns whether a particular hider is stable, say, always hiding in the living room, or volatile, changing spots frequently. The child then adjusts their search strategy. If their nephew is consistently found in the living room, a single instance of him being somewhere else is correctly treated as a fluke. Right? Not a signal to drastically alter the whole search strategy next time. This demonstrates an adaptive flexibility in how prior beliefs are weighted. It makes the system more resilient to noise and transient changes, and thus, I'd say highly adaptive. It helps us build consistent models of reality.
I have to say, I remain skeptical that this meta-learning mechanism always functions adaptively, especially in really complex modern situations. This seemingly adaptive process can become a profound vulnerability when the environment itself becomes truly unpredictable. Think about experiencing widespread, sudden changes like a global pandemic and unprecedented lockdowns. That kind of shock can lead to a global shift toward expecting uncertainty in the entire environment. And what happens then? The brain adopts a high learning rate, making it more sensitive to bottom-up signals. It becomes ready to accept newsworthy and important information, even if that information comes from a bizarre conspiracy theory like QAnon. There was a Yale study demonstrating exactly this, showing how increasing beliefs about environmental volatility correlated with a greater willingness to endorse these sorts of conspiracies.
This illustrates how an otherwise adaptive mechanism, when faced with an inherently unpredictable world, can lead people to believe incredible, incredulous things. It really demonstrates a profound vulnerability in our whole theory-building process. It shows that the environment heavily dictates whether this mechanism actually serves us or, well, leads us significantly astray, sometimes with really alarming consequences.
All right, so in sum, the brain's fundamental reliance on prior beliefs and the resultant cognitive biases that come with them are really integral to its function as a kind of skull-bound scientist. They allow for efficient pattern recognition, coherent perception, and reasonably robust decision-making in a very complex world. They buffer us from constant flux and uncertainty. This system is a sophisticated balance, finely tuned to help us navigate reality even when it's inherently ambiguous, making the whole problem of perception solvable in the first place. Ultimately, our brains are perhaps survival machines first, an objective truth seeker second, with biases acting as essential, though admittedly imperfect, tools in that survival kit.
And to conclude from my side, while the brain's predictive nature is undeniable and, yes, crucial for its operation, the capacity for misinterpretation and the formation of maladaptive biases represents a significant and often very costly vulnerability. when our internal models are poorly calibrated, or our confidence is exaggerated, or indeed our environment becomes profoundly volatile, these biases can create a truly distorting rather than clarifying lens. This can lead to experiences like hallucinations, those illusions of control we talked about, ingrained prejudice, and an alarming susceptibility to extreme beliefs. Now, as your Knot notes, the tether between reality and experience is rarely completely severed, but it can certainly become dangerously tenuous with very real-world consequences. So ultimately, while biases might make us efficient in some ways, they also create critical blind spots and vulnerabilities, especially in complex dynamic environments demanding our constant awareness and, perhaps, humility.
Both of our perspectives, I think, highlight the profound way our brains actively construct our experience of reality. We differ primarily on whether the biases inherent in this construction are ultimately a strength or a weakness, a feature, or indeed a bug.
Mm-hmm. We hope this discussion helps illuminate the really complex interplay between our internal models and the external reality we navigate, and maybe encourages listeners to consider the profound influence of their own skull-bound scientist and that ongoing internal search for a better model, a better theory.
Indeed. There is always more to explore in the trick of the mind that invents our reality.